Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. So when I finished up my five-episode series in Louisiana on the last episode of the podcast, I know I said we'd be returning to Georgia. While we're going to explore some more small towns in my home state, I decided to remind you all of the great small towns that you can visit in Mississippi by replaying an episode from my last visit there last year. The pandemic was still raging, and things were certainly not normal on my visit, but I loved each of the four towns I had the chance to explore. I encourage all of you to make a road trip to visit some small towns very soon, and I hope you'll enjoy this replay of my interview with Mayor Glenn Barlow in the small town of French Camp, Mississippi. Come go with me.
Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia.
Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the city of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit CoffeeGAChamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. All right, I'm now in the town of French Camp, Mississippi. I'm in the front room of Town Hall, which also doubles as the Town Hall Chamber, where the town council meets. And I'm joined with the mayor of French Camp, Mississippi, Mayor Glenn Barlow. Mayor Barlow, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, Mayor Seal, we want to welcome you to the town of French Camp and thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you very much. I want to set the stage. Sometimes when I'm kind of in a unique setting, although they're getting uniqueness is more and more common on my podcast, we're looking out on, I guess that would be considered Main Street. There's a big window in the room we're in. And when I walked in, and it was kind of a conference table, the office is one room farther back. But you said this is where your town council meets. And as we were setting up everything, you actually told me a little something about this nice conference table we're sitting at. So tell our audience about how this came to be.
Actually, the conference table, we had a folding table that we used for years and years
just
and years.
Just a little plastic
folding table that we used as our conference table, but we also have a store that's called Double Blessings, which is a thrift store.
Right.
And this conference table was going to the thrift store with the chairs that you see around. And so we were able to get it at the thrift store at thrift store prices. So,
yeah.
You know, so we got the whole set for like $25.
And so, the chairs came with it?
The chairs came with it.
And we've got, let's see, there's six chairs around the table.
I'm trying to think of how to describe the dimensions, but this is a nice long conference table here, a $25 set, and there's not much room for anything else in this, in this room. You got a little room to pass by to get to the office there.
That's right.
So I think you said there was more room for people to sit and watch, observe the town council business. Did you have some disturbing citizens? And so you got a bigger table to make less room for
them? To make less room for them. Actually, we most of the time, if we have visitors, we may have two visitors.
Right.
Now, we a couple of times have had more than that, and so it's standing room only.
And it's easier to say that now with this big table in here.
That's right.
So I do see now the two chairs are back against the wall. That came
that's
with the
guest.
Two. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And that came
that's
with
the guest table.
Yep, they matched.
So we got eight chairs in it.
So small towns require small town halls and small town council chambers. So, all right, we're going to talk a lot more about French Camp and the small town aspect of living here. But let's first talk about you. And I'll start with the same question I start with every guest. Were you born in French Camp, Mississippi?
No, but I've been here since 1977. I was actually born in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, big city boy.
So the big city boy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so when then moved to Itabena, Mississippi.
Now, where, that sounds like it could be a small town.
That's a small town just out of Greenwood.
Okay.
Yep.
So about 7 miles out of Greenwood, and it was a small town. So.
And so where did you end up going to school and graduating high school?
I ended up graduating high school in Orlando, Florida at Edgewater High School.
Oh, so you left the whole state
I left the whole state for a while.
Okay.
My dad's job moved him, and so we went to Orlando, and I got involved in DECA. Do you know what that is? Distributive Education Clubs of America?
I'm not, no.
Okay, well, DECA was a national known program where you went to school half a day and worked half a day.
Okay.
And so I was in DECA and became state president of DECA. My now wife, which we've been married for 45 years, she was a state treasurer.
Okay.
And, you know, went to two different schools, but we met and married.
So that was in high school. So she kind of became a high school sweetheart, even from a different school.
Right.
Through DECA.
Right, but
I'm sure you're both glad that you were involved in that program going to school.
But I'm going to tell you this, and this doesn't have to be part of the story, but it is part of our story.
Yeah.
We dated in high school. I worked the night shift at Holiday Inn, so she would come and lean on the desk and talk to me. So I graduated from high school on Thursday. She graduated on Friday, and we got married on Saturday.
Well, that's very sweet.
So 45 years later. So we're still together.
Well, let's talk about what happened after that. What did you do after high school? Well, after you, obviously the first thing you did after high school was get married.
That's right.
And then what?
We moved to Birmingham, Alabama because we had good jobs there. And so we worked, we actually lived in Hoover, Alabama. I heard you talked about Hoover. And we lived in Hoover and she worked for the Dixie Bearing. And I worked for the telephone company.
Okay.
2 years after that, in 1977, I have a cousin that works here at French Camp. He and his wife came over to show off babies. We both had our first babies, and they came over to show off babies.
Yeah.
On their way out, they said, hey, French Camp needs a set of house parents. Y'all ought to come and check it out.
Okay. And that's what you did.
2 weeks later, we came over, checked it out. A month later, we moved to French Camp, and this is where we're at.
So that's... You both had good jobs in Birmingham, Alabama, big city.
Yep.
It's probably
big
bigger.
City.
It's probably bigger now than it was.
You're
when you were there. What is it? I mean, you had a little bit of some roots in Mississippi yourself. Was your wife born and raised in Florida?
No. She was born and raised in Georgia. Moved to Florida. Her dad got sort of the same situation. Her dad got transferred to Florida, and that's where they came from.
So what is it that drew you? I mean, there was a job opportunity that allowed you to come here, but what is it that drew you away from the big city of Birmingham to come to French Camp, Mississippi?
Actually, French Camp Academy is a ministry.
Okay.
It's a school home for kids from broken homes.
Oh.
And so that's what actually drew us to French Camp, is to be a part of that ministry.
Well, tell me more about that, because I saw the sign for French Camp Academy, and I think you referenced it as a private school. But it sounds like it's very different than other private schools.
French Camp Academy is a boarding school for kids from broken homes. Now, as time has gone on, it's not all kids from broken homes. There are some families that just want their kids to come to a good school that's got a good reputation.
Right.
And French Camp has been around, and it has a great reputation. I like to say that it's not problem kids, as most people would refer to it as, but it's more like problem parents that don't have time to raise their kids, and so they need some help because the kids, you know, may get into problems or may get into trouble or may not.
And so you guys, house parents with French Camp Academy.
That's right.
You guys, how many kids were you essentially responsible for in the house?
Over the years, we've either had 14 or 16 kids plus our own children.
Wow.
And we had three children of our own.
Wow.
It's a big, big organization. They try to make sure that the kids have good home upbringing from wherever they stand. And we have students here from first grade to 12th grade.
Okay.
They come in and they get a good education. They get a good upbringing. They hear from church services every Sunday and Wednesday and, you know, devotions and things like that. So, and as I told you before, we've had kids that have gone on from here that have become lawyers and senators and congressmen. And,
right.
You know, and so we have a good record of what kids go. We don't say that all kids have to go to college. We have kids that go into the military and have done great in the military.
Sure. So, yeah, college isn't the only option.
That's not the only option.
I'm curious about this, and I'm getting back to your timeline in a minute, but that's kind of a unique setup. So from how far away do people come, do the students come to attend French Camp? Is it very much a regional thing, or have you got people from other states?
No,
even?
we have folks from Washington State, from,
oh, wow. Okay.
From Pennsylvania, from just all over the United States.
Yeah.
And in times past, one of the unique things is we have been a school that, for instance, Chiquita Banana Company in Honduras used to send a lot of students over here to go to school.
Wow, okay.
And they would get their degrees, and hopefully they'd come back and work for Chiquita Banana, you know.
Like
so,
a scholarship program.
Right, like a scholarship program. And so we've had kids that have come under that circumstance. We've had kids that have come from overseas because of political unsettlement.
Mm-hmm.
And so their families would be able, you know, they'd be in an upper echelon of that country, and they'd send their students here.
And we actually kind of talked about this a little bit before as I was setting up my recording equipment here. What's the student population? How many students are enrolled at one time? You said that's first grade through 12th grade.
Okay. In the dorms, there's about 120 to 140 students, depending on the year.
So not all of them live on campus.
Right.
Okay.
And then there's about 100 that come in from off campus. So 240, 250 students.
I remember you saying that kind of has affected your population, because in fact, I'll go ahead and have this, because I asked this at some point in every episode. What's the population in your mind?
The population is about 300,
yeah.
A little over 300. But that includes those 120 to 140 dorm students.
Because they're residents. They're living.
They're residents. Yeah. They live here over 10 months out of the year.
Right.
In 2000, the dorm students were counted. 2010, they weren't. 2020, they will be counted again.
Right.
And so
it was just a one-time...
you'll see an up and down.
So it looks like you had quite a population decline between 2000
That's
and 2010.
Right.
And now it's going to look like you're really surging.
That's right. We're surging.
Doubled in population because of the way they counted. So, well, you came here to do that in 1977. How long did you stay with French Camp Academy? Are you still involved? It sounds like you're very passionate about that organization. And it seems to be a big part of your community.
Right. Yes, we're still involved. My wife is in the dean's office, which means that she still works with all of the kids that come in.
Wow.
I work for a 100,000-watt Christian radio station that is a part of French Camp Academy. So the radio station was built in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the first commercial nonprofit stations, in which means that we can go out and sell advertisement. But because it goes back into a nonprofit school, we're able to get the benefits.
It allows you to be a fundraising arm of,
right.
of a charitable organization.
That's right.
A nonprofit.
That's right.
Or not for profit, I guess.
That's right. Not for profit now. And so so that's part of it. There's 12 dorms. There's 6 boys' dorms, 6 girls' dorms. Like we said, we have kids from all over the United States and sometimes different countries. The school has been in operation over 100 years.
Wow.
It began as a Presbyterian school, but it's now a non-denominational school. So, you know, and we have different races that come, and it's just a school that tries to support the kids to bring them up in the right environment.
I'm definitely, because as we talk more about French Camp, that's obviously a huge component of your community.
Yes, it is.
Just, if nothing else, the size of the population represented at the school. But I want to kind of continue with your story. And at some point, you got involved in local government. And in our conversation earlier, it sounds like you've had multiple roles before we got to mayor of, yeah. of French
well,
Camp. So how did you first get involved in local government? And even if that was in through some other organization, civic organization or planning
right.
commission or whatever.
Early on in the early 80s, I became an alderman for the town. And around here, normally, you know, back in those days, it was a mayor. You had to have five aldermen
okay.
to have a city council.
Right.
Okay.
You had to get five people to be willing
That's right.
in order to have it.
That's right. And so the mayor sort of asked me if I would run for alderman, and I did. And became an alderman for the town.
I assume that's at large.
That's at large. All are at large.
So since he came and asked you, he was looking for people. So I assume that was not a competitive race.
Right. It was not. It was not.
Probably no election that year, because if you got enough people, the right number of people to qualify, you actually don't even have to vote.
Not at that time. You still had to have a town election.
You have an election.
Even though there's only five running for
five.
Council and one for mayor.
Okay. Five running for five seats and one running for one seat, and you still got to check a box.
At that point in time, you still had to have an election.
Just to make it official.
Now, to make it official, that's right. Now, we're gonna come into the conversation about MML. MML, Mississippi Municipal League,
<Make sure. laughs>
they helped us get law passed that if you only have five running for council, mm-hmm. one running for mayor, you don't have to have an election.
And I want to point out to the audience, especially folks in bigger cities where there's always a competitive race, the importance of that on a small town is the cost to run an election.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's all it.
You're paying for something in those cases where you've got five people running for five seats, all of them are going to get it.
Right.
It's a foregone conclusion, and you've got to pay all and to go by the standards of the elections, criteria for the state.
That's right. You have to have three people working an election and,
yep.
you know, pay them for a full
three
day.
People an hour come in.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
You know. And the other thing that Mississippi Municipal League has helped us do in the past 3 years, I believe it was 3 years ago, we actually got past that a small town under 1,000 people can go with three aldermen and a mayor.
Okay. So you actually wanted less.
Right.
Okay.
Some of the small towns did. I still have five because I still have five people that want to be on the board.
Okay. But not all small towns can find five people
that's
to,
right.
want to serve in that.
Even community. Though they make $30 a month.
Yeah.
They still want to be on the board.
Yeah.
You know, that may be their, you know, Coca-Cola
that's
money.
Their,
I don't know what
their,
it is.
That's their civic duty. The $30 you know,
right.
is just a gravy. Yeah.
Right. So.
So yeah. you became an alderman, and that was.
Became an alderman. In 1989, my wife and I felt the call to go to the Philippines to be missionaries to a boarding school over there.
Okay.
And
their version of a French camp again.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we went over to help them realize what they needed to do to actually hang on to house parents, because okay. French Camp has a history of having house parents for 10 or 12 years. Or more.
And this other one had
and the
much
other,
quicker turnover.
Their turnover yeah. was like every year they were turning
right.
over house parents.
And that's,
so,
you definitely want to have a little more stability.
So we went over children. To try to help that take place. We stayed in the Philippines 3.5 years, came right back to French Camp, went right back to work here as house parents again. So in that 3.5 years, of course, I had to resign as alderman.
Right. And, couldn't attend meetings in this room.
Right. It was hard to attend meetings. And
they,
so,
didn't have Zoom.
Didn't have Zoom. And
you
so,
couldn't teleconference in from the
that's
Philippines.
That's right. So after I came back, I didn't get right back into town politics, but it wasn't very long before they needed a town clerk.
Okay.
And that was an appointed position, and so I was appointed town clerk and was town clerk for a number of years. And in 2000, I became an alderman again.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to leave the job as town clerk
right,
since
I did.
An employee?
I did.
Let me actually put a pause on that and just ask you what in a town this size, you're talking about 300 people population-wise, as long as you count the students at the
right.
school, what are the duties of a town clerk Because I think that's, how many employees are there? You were telling me this. You were kind of going through them, and it's really just a handful of people.
Well, we only have the town clerk that is a paid employee
okay,
for the town. Yeah. The rest, your aldermen get paid $30 a month. The mayor gets paid $300 a month. And so, you know, there's a lot more, but that's only employees that we have.
So anything that gets done by the town clerk.
That's right.
And the mayor and the alderman pitch in, I'm sure.
That's right.
Okay.
And so she, of course, she writes all the checks and she keeps up with all the taxes and retirement and everything that goes in. She has to take care of it.
So you were that until 2001, left that position and became an alderman again.
Right. The mayor at that time said that he was going to get out of town politics, which was Larry Littlejohn, which happened to be my first cousin.
Okay.
But he said, Glenn, would you run one term as alderman so that you can help the new mayor, whoever that might be, get acclimated? And
I see where the story is going. Little did you know at the time you would be helping yourself.
Little did I know, because the mayor that took over, Sharon McIntyre, was a great guy, was a brilliant fella. He got sick, and 6 months after he was in office, he had to resign and move back to Texas, where he was from.
Yeah.
Which, in turn, the mayor pro tem, me, became the mayor.
So you became the acting mayor, not actually putting yourself out to be elected mayor, qualify for mayor.
Right. And then the old term came around, and I don't know if you've ever heard this, but it was either you continue running as mayor or you get run out of town. Take your choice.
Yeah.
So I'm still mayor.
You're still, you haven't felt, you gotta, you're not the first person to suggest what it sounds like. You have to recruit your own replacement.
That's right.
Now,
that's
bigger cities, there's always somebody who wants the, you know, there's a little more power and status, I guess, but it's very much a servant and community oriented labor of love in so many ways. You're not the first person to say, I'm trying to recruit somebody to do this job, but nobody seems to want it.
Right. Well, my actually mayor pro tem is the niece of Sharon McIntyre.
Okay.
So, you know, if I happen to just walk out of the job, she's going to take over, and she's got a little experience as a clerk. So I think that's the way it works around here. You just do what you have to do.
So you've been the mayor since 2001.
Yes.
And you're hoping to find a replacement or maybe
at some point, maybe.
Now, you've mentioned the Mississippi Municipal League, and you know, we started having this conversation too. You are a past president, so not only were you going through training, like so I'm sure you know most all mayors and aldermen, councilmen go through training. You actually got more involved with some of the boards and commissions and things like that to the point that you were the state president. So talk about what it means to have the Municipal League, what it does on behalf of cities, and if MML is anything like GMA, the Georgia Municipal Association, it seems to. I know big cities use the services and the advocacy as well, but for small towns that are resource strapped, it seems to be even more necessary to get that kind of help and assistance.
Part of the thing was is when I became mayor, I said, look, I don't know anything about the laws or what is required of us or what we need to be doing.
Steep learning curve.
So I said, the only way that I'll become mayor is if I can get involved with Mississippi Municipal League, because I knew that they had trainings at least twice a year, you know, three or four times a year that you could get involved in and make sure that you knew about the tax laws, that you knew about just everything that's going on. And so at that point in time, I thought, well, if I'm going to get involved and the town's going to spend money for me to be down here, whether it be in Jackson or on the coast or wherever the small town conference was held that year, I want to be involved. And so at that point in 2001, I took on some roles with the Municipal League. Like we had a fishing tournament every year, and so I took on the chairmanship of the fishing tournament so that I could get involved and meet other people, because in a small town, a lot of what you learn is not sitting in a classroom, but it's your communication and your meetings with other people.
And finding out what's going on in some other town that may be a little bigger, a little smaller than yours, but the same principles apply and same concepts and programs can work.
So that's what I started doing.
Yeah.
And as it got further on, I kept thinking, well, I can be an officer in this organization, but my deal when I started to run for that, Matt, is I did not want the town to have to pay any money out for the election.
Right.
So we had postcards and we had cookies, which you'll get to enjoy some cookies that were made here in French Camp, homemade cookies.
Can't wait.
And so, but that's the two things that we actually spent money on to run my election for vice president.
You really campaign and
uh-huh. Okay. You do. Okay. You do. You run for second vice president, and that year we had the mayor of Tunica and the mayor of Farmington, and of course me, the mayor of French Camp, running. So we all had booths that you set up, and you decide what you're going to give away or what you're going to do. And so cookies here in French Camp are a big thing. Okay.
So the cookies won the election for you?
So the cookies won the election for me. And these other two mayors would tell you the same thing, that they started calling me the cookie man. And one of them actually would walk around the day of that people were coming up by our booths, and he'd say, "Oh, don't go get one of those cookies. They'll make you sick." Well, the reason they made him sick is because he had eaten so much.
It was his own fault.
So
cookies were just so tempting.
You run as second vice president in Mississippi Municipal League.
And then once you get that.
You move up to first vice president and then president.
Okay.
And so that's the, you know. And for a small town,
It
was just one of those things that sort of just blew you away that, you know. And what's so neat about it is I was afforded some opportunities to learn more, because you go to conventions for the southern states.
Right.
You get to see people from the southern states and get to visit with them on a 3-day week,
right,
where you go
and
to
classes
together.
Not only are
together,
you networking with people from your own state, but now you've got other states to find out different things going on.
That's right. And then also during that time, Mississippi Municipal League sends you to the National League of Cities.
Right.
And so you get to go to Washington and see the National League of Cities at work and see what they do. Now, of course, they're a small town. You'll get a kick out of this. Their small town are 10,000 people, lowest, you know.
That's the lowest, because I think they go up to about, I want to say, 35,000 or 50,000.
Yeah.
So, because I looked into it, they have a small cities conference too. And I think whoever the chair, because they have officers as well. I looked into that and I remember thinking, well, that number is a bit bigger than what I would consider a small town. But I guess if you go outside of your state and you look at the whole country, it's all relative, right?
That's right. It's all relative. And so, but it is funny to think that, okay, I'm going to a meeting of small towns, and they're thinking the small town is 10,000. And when they come around and ask you, and you say 300.
it's all relative. Well, because I had to, when I started this podcast, I had to set, I guess, kind of a high watermark. And I picked 10,000 as the highest. So if you're over population 10,000, for my purposes, I won't consider it a small town.
I got you.
But even within that, you're 300. So if I told you about a small town like Fitzgerald that's near us and they have about 9,000, you say, oh, man, that's a booming metropolis.
That's big.
Yeah, Osceola's 3,400. So that's a little bigger than French Camp.
That's right.
But I still consider it a small town.
That's right.
All right. Well, Mayor Barlow, I've gotten to a section. It's become kind of famous on the podcast, called the Get to Know You questions. It'll help me get to know you a little better. Maybe someone that thinks they know you will get to know you a little better by the answers to these. So, four questions. First one, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
Yes. My nickname used to be Snuffy.
Snuffy.
As Snuffy Smith.
Okay. Where did that come from?
My older brother.
He just started
calling me Snuffy, and I think it might have been because at night I might have.
So instead of calling you Sniffles, he
Sniffles
just called you Snuffy.
Snuffy. So
now I noticed when you handed me your business card when I first met you today to set up and everything, your Glenn is your middle name. It's H. Glenn Barlow. Will I embarrass you to ask you what the H stands for?
No, the H stands for Harold.
Okay.
And my dad was called Harold, and so they just started calling me Glenn.
So you went by Glenn as the middle name, so that you and your dad would know which one of you was being called on.
Which one was being called on, you know. And, of course, I knew when they called me Harold Glenn Barlow that
you
I better
were in
take
trouble.
Notice.
Yeah.
Right.
It was usually
was
your
trouble.
Mother, right? All right, Snuffy. All right, next question. What would be your go-to karaoke song? MML is gonna host a battle for Small Town Pride, and each mayor has to sing a karaoke song. Which one's yours?
Ooh, you better pause on that one.
That's all right. Take your time. This one stumps a lot of people. So
does it? The way we were?
The way we were. Okay. That was an interesting one. All right. The way we were. All right. There's your karaoke song. All right. Next one. This will be easier. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Fried green tomatoes.
Okay. You have that as a meal or just as an appetizer?
No, we just have them. We can have them as a meal.
That's dinner.
Just
fried green tomatoes.
Yeah.
Man, okay. All right. And final question. If you could attend any concert, any performance of a singer, a duo, band, any kind of performer at all, and they can either be alive or they can be dead, whose concert, whose performance would you want to see?
Well, I suppose because growing up in Mississippi that Elvis would have to be one or either Charlie Pride.
Okay, so, Elvis or Charlie Pride. Maybe they can.
Maybe they could do a
one
joint.
One could open for the other. I'll let y'all decide who opens for who in that group. So, all right, Glenn Barlow, thanks for, or Snuffy, I should say.
Yeah,
thanks for
letting
me get to know you.
Throughout this series, we've been learning about all the resources the Mississippi Municipal League provides with Samantha Wilmoth, MML's marketing coordinator. Last time we talked with Samantha, we discussed the networking opportunities MML members have with each other. Mississippi Municipal League also has ways to connect municipal leaders with service providers for the benefit of their towns.
All right, and we're with Samantha Wilmoth for one last time.
Hello.
Samantha, how are you? We talked last time about networking and you know, the importance of networking amongst local officials, but you guys kind of have a way for people like me in Mississippi that are local elected officials to network with companies. And so talk about that, the associate program.
Yeah, so our associate member program is the program that we set up to get private companies and businesses directly into the sights and minds of our local leaders across the state. And by joining on to the associate member program, you get direct access to the key decision makers in all the cities, and you get several different benefits that come along with membership. But probably the biggest one is being included in our municipal marketplace, which is housed on our website. And it lists all of our associate members alphabetically and categorically. So if you know what company you're looking for, of course, you can go and click them from the drop-down list. But for some of our smaller towns that might have a situation come up that they haven't had to face before or know who to contact for answers or solutions, they can visit our municipal marketplace, search by category, and see the direct contact listing for all the different companies that offer services in that area. So for example, if you're looking for playground equipment, you can go to our website, select the category of playground or recreation equipment, and get three or four different companies pop up that'll give you a hyperlink to visit their website directly and go ahead and get a direct view of the services that they provide.
They have to sign up for it, or is it something that's just on your website that people can just go take advantage of right now?
It's on our website, so anyone can take advantage of it. So it's kind of a broad benefit for our associate members. We don't keep it privatized behind any kind of password, lock and key. So everybody that knows the league knows that you can go to our website and check out who we've got joined on with us through our associate member program.
All right. Well, Samantha, it's been great getting to talk to you on these episodes.
So, we've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for letting me come hang out in Mississippi for a little while.
And, we'll come back now.
All right. Well, I hope to see you again soon then.
All right.
All right. Take care.
This road trip series of Small Town Podcast in Mississippi is proudly sponsored by Government Consultants. In cities and towns of all sizes, modern municipal government can be a challenging financial enterprise with complex rules on things such as property taxes, user fees, water rates, and the issuance of debt. With these increasing challenges and complexities, local government leaders are turning to trusted advisors like Government Consultants to assist them in navigating these financial issues for the betterment of their communities. Government Consultants can advise your local government on things like capital improvement, long-range planning, and budgeting for general government projects, as well as water and sewer enterprise projects, financial feasibility of projects, including the local government's ability to carry the project cost or debt service, analysis of current budget and expected revenue stream, total cost analysis of financing alternatives, review of capital improvement financing programs, and advice on the timing, structuring, sizing, and marketing of any municipal debt. Government Consultants has many years of experience in advising local governments on all types of debt financing, and they can help you with general obligation bonds, water and sewer revenue bonds, special assessment and urban renewal bonds, as well as lease financing, short-term notes, tax increment financing,
tax, bond, or grant anticipation notes, emergency borrowing, and borrowing through a conduit issuer such as the Mississippi Development Bank. In maintaining and growing your community, the finance piece is more important than ever. Let government consultants help you manage and grow. They'd be happy to visit with you in your city to discuss how they might be of service to you. Call 601-982-0005 to talk to government consultants today. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. Erwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Erwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Erwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to erwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Erwinomics, helping small town business thrive. Well, as we shift back into talking very specifically about French Camp, I want to go back to French Camp Academy, obviously, because its student population in comparison to the rest of the population of French Camp. It seems like the town really has to, it's kind of, they coexist as a symbiotic relationship. So talk about, I guess, how that works. It would seem like, and for the academy to draw people in who eventually become mayor, like yourself, that the community really gets behind it and feels like there's a sense of, because the way you described it was very much like a mission. It is not a boarding school that's run like a business. It is something that is run like a mission with a purpose to help people from all over the world, it sounds like. So talk about how that coincides with French Camp as the town.
Well, the towns, of course, all of the townspeople, most of the townspeople went to school at French Camp Academy and graduated from French Camp Academy.
Yeah.
So, you know, because it is a private school, but it's here in the community.
Yeah.
So, you know. So
yeah, because you said 100 students
about
roughly,
100 students
are not living on campus. They're right here in town or just right. The outskirts of town.
And so everybody that's, let me think through now, most of the business folks here, everybody that's in business in the town of French Camp, other than our new Dollar General, all of the local businesses are actually run by folks that have graduated from French Camp Academy.
Okay.
And been here all their lives. Yeah. And so
the business community has to, they support it as alumni, essentially.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. As part of the Alumni Association.
Yeah.
So we have Henderson's Auto Parts that is way more than auto parts. They have everything from, you know, electrical supplies to plumbing supplies to, you know, but they're called Henderson's Auto Parts. Barlow Blue is, I'm not recognizing myself, that's my daughter-in-law.
Oh, okay.
But she started, she and my son were house parents, and she started making jewelry in the dorm so that the kids could make a little bit of money.
Oh.
Now she has a full-blown business in town. The Three-Way, which is a gas station and the Friday Night Fish House.
Yeah.
both the husband and wife graduated from French Camp and owned that business. Of course, the school has double blessings. They have the observatory, which is one of the best in the South. They have the Council House restaurant. So all are part of the school.
So those businesses are run essentially by French Camp Academy?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They are.
Okay.
They are.
So a lot of students work there also, or how does that work?
Well, all of our students, just to give you a little bit about the students at French Camp Academy, the dorm students, they go to school in the mornings or in the daytime. They have a little bit of break between school, but then every dorm student, if they're not playing sports, has a work crew that they go to. They either help mow the yards, they help in the thrift shops sorting stuff. They work washing dishes or working cleaning offices and things like that. Mm-hmm. Every student has to work an hour and a half Monday through Friday and 3 hours on Saturday.
Okay.
So even if you play sports, if you play football on Friday night, you get up and you're at work at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning for 3 hours.
Yeah.
So you can be sore, you can be out of shape, but you're going to do your work.
Okay.
And that's part of your tuition to help us so we don't have to have so many staff members.
You just named several. I mean, it's a handful, but they seem to be distinctive. People who graduate from French Camp Academy and then stay, some starting businesses, some working at the academy. What is it, I guess, that kind of keeps people? Because you've got a small population, so obviously opportunities and jobs and some of those things that cause small towns to kind of sometimes wither or at least stagnate. Mm-hmm. You've got something that seems to be keeping things going. So what is it that kind of keeps people engaged instead of going off somewhere else, whether it's the big city of Birmingham like you ended up or even just somewhere slightly bigger than a 300 member town?
Man, I think it goes back to the motto that we have. Our town motto is a small town that makes a difference. And every person, whether they live in town or whether they live at the school, they realize that we're making a difference, that we've got something that we want everybody to know about. We've got something that everybody can enjoy. Whether it goes back to our historic district, we have a pottery person that makes pottery that uses the clay from Mississippi soil to make pottery and things like that. So all of that being said, we keep, everybody wants to stay here because this is a quiet, most of the time, no problem situation.
Yeah.
You know, log truck speed up and down the road, and yes, we don't like that, but it happens.
We've had a couple of them go by.
Part of the, the thing that goes on. We had a police officer that was killed in the line of duty, supporting another police department. So those things do happen here, but it's so far and few between that everybody just wants to remain here and keep things going. You know, I can tell you about our town flag and our motto. Years ago, when we were trying to do this for the Mississippi Municipal League, after I became mayor, I was sitting at home and I was writing on scrap paper, doing things, trying to come up with a motto and a town flag. Mm-hmm. And there was a young lady that had gotten in trouble. And I don't mind saying she was from Madison, Mississippi, but she had gotten in trouble. And so it was only a couple of weeks before the end of school. So for her to be able to finish school, she needed to live with a staff member.
Okay.
So she moved in with my wife and I.
Oh.
And we were sitting there and she said, "Mr. Barlow, I know what your motto can be." And so she wrote that out, a small town that makes a difference. And that stuck. I brought it before the board, and we all thought, wow, that's what we're all about, a small town that makes a difference. And so that's just a side note that's even with kids that get in trouble, we try to make sure that they still succeed if we possibly can.
Yeah. It's interesting. I told you when I set up these microphones, I do things unscripted. I start with the first question, the same for everybody, but then where the conversation goes, I just kind of let it go. And it's this, the theme of this conversation has been a small town, very much with a mission and a purpose. And the community seems to be all together behind that purpose. And that's a great story.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, I want to make sure we get to this. There are a couple festivals. You got a small town, not always going to have a local festival. You said there's two. One I think you said was actually French Camp Academy that does it. So right. Talk about those. So people can know what to go do in French
the
Camp.
The festival that the Academy host is Harvest Festival.
Okay.
It's held the second Saturday of every October.
And I think you said that one goes back to a good
many
years.
Has been going on 56 to 60 years. Okay. I don't remember the exact number, but it's right in there.
But not a new festival.
It's not a new festival. And it started out, the school and the churches in the area, everything has to be homemade that is sold at the auction. They have a quilt auction and people bring in quilts, but they also have woodworking, pottery, anything that people, that's handmade.
Right.
You know, you can't go to the store and buy something
right.
and put it in.
You can't buy something in bulk. And right. A lot of it, yeah.
You know, and then they have a country store, and it's got all kinds of canned goods and stuff like that, and people come through and buy and enjoy that. And so the second Saturday in October is that festival, and it's a great one to come and to attend. Most years, and I don't know why this year is different, but most years we actually make sorghum on that day. Mm-hmm. And we have the old horse grinding up the sorghum to make the sorghum molasses. This year, because of so much water, we don't have any sorghum that we're going to be able to use. And so I don't know if they're going to buy sorghum stalks and still make sorghum, but that's something that normally takes place on that day for
sure. But it was the water. I was going to say most festivities this year have been postponed or canceled for a different reason.
Right, right. But so far, October is still in looks that it's going to happen.
Okay, good.
At this point in time. Now, we'll go into the town festival. We've changed the name a couple of times. This year was going to be Founders Day, and it's actually a 210-year anniversary of the town of French Camp. Okay. We could go in and we could talk about Louis Lafleur. If you don't know, he was a French officer that came through the Natchez Trace.
Yeah, because I actually took the Natchez Trace for about, I guess, 35 miles to get here from where I started.
Okay.
So, yeah, tell us that, because I should have asked at the very beginning, how did French Camp get its name? I assume at one point it was a French camp.
Well, at one point it was called Frenchman's Camp. Okay. Because that's where the French would come in and they would do their trading with the Choctaw Indians and do everything that they needed on their way to Washington or to Nashville, wherever they were going. So it was Frenchman's Camp. And Louis Lafleur came through here and he settled here to talk to the Choctaw Indians, and he went to Washington to fight their cause. And so we actually have a carriage that Louis Lafleur went to Washington in.
Oh, nice.
On display.
Cool.
So now this year we were supposed to have Founders Day, and we were going to have a band. We were going to have Dixie National Wagon Train was going to come through. Choctaw Chief reenactment was going to take place of the British and the American reactors from the War of 1812 were going to be here. Mass church choirs and others were going to be here. So we had a lot planned for that particular day, but it got canceled this year. So next year, we'll actually do 211 years
there you go.
celebration and enjoy that. So a lot planned, and that'll be the second Saturday in May.
All right. So you got May the 8th. You have an extra year to plan a really
That's
big
right.
Founders Day.
That's right.
What were some of, you mentioned that there were other names, and this time was going to be the first time it was called Founders
it
Day?
It was the first time it was Founders Day. It started out as Frontier Day, and then we changed it to Pioneer Day, and now we're on Founders
Day.
So I think that's what we're going to keep it at.
Okay. Well, Mayor, as we start to kind of wrap up our conversation, I'll give you the same opportunity I give to all my guests and let you speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and let them know why they should come visit, whether it's for some of your festivals, if they can or not, or maybe, like you, come move to French Camp, That's Mississippi.
Right. Matt, we have so much to offer that it's hard to put it down in just a few seconds, But, you know, we have a bed and breakfast here that is just wonderful to be able to stay at. And we don't have all of the amenities that everybody else has, but we have just a small location that you can sit on the back porch and see. There's a field back there that could have sorghum growing in it, or it could have a family of deer walking across, or rabbits or whatever. So that bed and breakfast is just a great place to sit on the back porch and enjoy your coffee and to be able to look out. We have some small cabins that are part of the bed and breakfast that you can stay at. The Welcome Center is here, where you can get homemade bread that's made every day. And the bread at Christmas time, French Camp Academy sends out over 5,000 loaves of bread to donors, you know, and so that's a big process.
Yeah.
We talked about the cookies that are made there. So that's where you get cookies. We have sauces for sandwiches and things that you'll get to enjoy today when we go to the Council House Cafe.
All right.
So there's a lot there. We have a historic district that shows the cabins and has a gift shop and has pottery and things like that. Normally, you would get to see a pottery making pottery, but because of COVID, we've had to sort of stop that process right now, put it on hold. We have an observatory here that has been here, and it's one of the best in the South because we still have dark skies at night. So you can still see, because we don't have any big towns around us. So there's a lot to see that the school has to offer, the town has. I'd just like to finish by saying that motto one more time. We are a small town that makes a difference. Come see us.
Well, Mayor Glenn Barlow, thanks so much for being a part of Small Town Podcast.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode, whether you've heard it before or whether this was your first time. There are three other small towns in Mississippi that have episodes on Small Town Podcast, and you can listen to them as well through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and of course on our website. As always, I appreciate our season sponsors for Season 4 of Small Town Podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. Now really, we're headed back to Georgia to explore some more small towns there. I'll talk to you soon. Y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.